This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our guest today has come from a place near Philadelphia, and he is Chad Frame. And he's here to share his work, and so here he is with an opening poem.
Dear Mark Doty, am I doing it right? I know we all walk our own path through the snarl of brambles in this forest, that what we sacrifice is different, so is what we achieve. Should I be sorry I have not yet lost what you have lost, that I have fewer miles of path behind me, that my achievements are modest at best, that I prefer cats? I know you will answer not to compare apples and oranges, two different fruits in two different lives, but maybe kindred, I dare to hope, savored by the same mouths. Perhaps the same lips purse for us, reading our disparate poems, as if to kiss their authors. Perhaps the tongues, those same silk sleeves, wrap around our words, pink and pining. Please, Mark, tell me I will grow to be wise and loved, that I will leave a legacy of epiphanies and dog-eared pages behind me, somewhere in both of our wakes.
That is the voice of Chad Frame, and a great homily for our friend Mark Doty. Tell us who he is.
So he is, of course, a contemporary poet, and he's just a wonderful gay man who writes openly about it. He wrote about the loss of his partner to the AIDS epidemic. And he's just, I think, a very strong poet and a strong human being.
And the fact that he's one of America's most beloved poets.
Yes.
Don't you think that's a very significant thing?
I think it is. And I think that he can be open about himself, has led the next generation of poets to do the same.
He's taught us so much. And I saw that line. There's so much embedded in that poem. He has dogs. Of course, his books are all about his dogs.
Yes.
And so you apologize for having a cat. But you're happy to be in his trail of stardust, right?
Yes.
Did you send that to him?
I did not. I was hoping he might hear it here.
Oh, but just in case.
Yes, I will.
We do cover the world, but
yes.
I do want you to mail that to him.
I will.
He will be, you know, he'll really receive it in the right way. So that brings us to the subject of what you write about, Chad Frame.
Yes. So I guess I started writing about more personal things more recently. My writing always used to be a lot more detached and intellectual. And instead of just, it was like an exercise of putting together a puzzle, I always used to think of it. And it was only until the past few years, when I went back for my MFA, that I decided to actually write about my life, that it was something worth writing about. And when I started to do that, I really unlocked something. And people responded to my work a lot more than they did. Like, there wasn't that distance between us.
What a lesson, yes. I met you at a big poetry festival in Virginia, and I was knocked out. Because you really opened yourself up to the public. And I thought, what a great lesson for us, for all of us, that vulnerability is strength.
Yes.
And that honesty works. And so, how hard is it for us to be vulnerable and still be safe?
You know, I think vulnerability has to be learned because I don't think it's innate.
Mm.
And I really had to teach myself little by little in a poem. It was a little bit more letting go.
Wow. That's a good point, right? So let's hear another.
Sure. This was pulled straight from a headline that was recent, whether fact or fiction, I wanted to explore it. So this is Richard Pryor slept with Marlon Brando, Pryor's widow confirms. Imagine them. Marlon, all sex and smooth-bodied, claims a bar stool, calls for Stella Artois in its slim-necked and foam-shawled flute. Dressed down between shoots, the white wife-beater hugging broad swaths of long-labored muscle. Richard is hunched three stools down, nursing gin, his tawny lips wet with juniper tang, the folded blue brim of a baseball cap shading his face, drumming spindly fingers on the polished bar, noting where they stick. Marlon glides over with the easy grace of predatory fish, and his rough hand is on Richard's knee, bold yet casual, as if it has always been there, always would be there. Perhaps there are words exchanged. Perhaps some things transcend language. What moves Richard from stiff-backed surprise to stumbling, hand in hand, down a long hotel hallway with Marlin's sandpapery chin brushing the nape of his neck? It doesn't matter. There are no celebrities in the dark. Only bodies, pushing, straining to fill the emptiness inside one another as long as they can, as long as the thin, floral-papered walls keep the world at bay. In the years to come, they will think of this, mid-soliloquy, mid-pause for laughter, mid-embrace with a woman they don't love. If somewhere in the credits of their lives, a name stands out, rising, meaning something.
Whoa, that is very powerful. How much of that did you inject, the flowered wallpaper? I mean, you know the incident happened, but then your imagination took them down the hallway with the rough beard against Richard's neck?
The only thing I took was the actual headline, was the title.
Say it again.
The Richard Pryor slept with Marlon Brando, Pryor's widow confirms. I took that and I just went with it.
Well, you sure went somewhere good. And I love the idea of celebrity anyway, because celebrity is just image.
Yes, and it's very accessible.
But it's very different from the person.
Yes.
So you got to the real thing.
That's the idea.
And that's what, Chad, you're all about.
Yes.
The real thing. Chad Frame. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're at the Library of Congress, and he came all this way. He has his MFA from Arcadia. Is that in Pennsylvania?
It is.
It sounds like
Glenside,
it.
Glenside, yes.
Yes. And his work has appeared in many, many journals and the Journal of Social Change as well. He is the Poet Laureate of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, which is so interesting because now we're having Poet Laureates of regions.
Yes.
Which then make a lot of things happen.
It's down to us at the local level to build community. And what I like to call it is, it's literary citizenship, but it's also building up your local area. So rather than relocate to a major metropolitan area, it's better to build local community. I call it don't relocate, renovate.
So. You're a good man to be in charge. You're editor of the New Italian American Writing. Let's see if you can say the title.
Ovunque Siamo.
And how did a wasp like you get such a... Well, you know, you're a very good editor, I must say, because I've seen the magazine.
Yes.
And I've seen what you've selected and edited. So I guess, how did that happen, though? Do you have a love for things Italian?
Well, I mean, I do, but it's my good friend Michelle Rialli, who was in the MFA with me, and we've stayed in very close touch. And she said, I'd like you to be my poetry editor. And I said, is it okay that I'm not at all Italian? And she said, sure. So,
you're doing a good job.
Thank you.
And Chad Frame is the founder of the Margins Panel of Diverse Artist Voices. So, and a member of an improv performance troupe. Ah, do a little.
Oh, no. So, well, it's an interesting, so the No River Twice is actually, it's audience-driven improvisation. So it's basically a panel of poets, and we bring our work, and the audience decides what comes next. So they direct the flow of the reading. And it's Hayden Saunier who founded it, and she's wonderful.
Okay, but do you come with text?
Yes, so we come with manuscripts, and so when one person will read, and then the audience will unpack what was just read. And
they'll talk about what was just read?
They'll latch onto themes, and then they'll say, what do you want to hear next? We heard, you know, that poem mentioned, you know, a mother, and this poem mentioned cars or something, some sort of theme, and then, or they'll latch onto one image, and then one of us will raise our hands, or a few of us will say, I have one about this, I have one about this.
This is a great idea. Mm-hmm. More people should do it. I've never heard of this before.
I think it's pretty groundbreaking, so we're going to see where it takes us.
Chad Frame is taking us somewhere. And where will it go next?
This is Christopher. What the hell, you ask, flush and flustered, spitting the worst words you know. The hell of the school bus lurching to a stop on my street. The red flashing lights we pretend are lasers firing from our yellow tank. The hell of the quiet between whatever third grade boys chatter on their ride home, sitting together. The hell of my leaning in for a sudden peck against your pink lips, an impulse I can't resist or explain. The hell I'm going to be living in for years before I can even begin to answer that question.
That says it all. How hard was that to write?
Very. This whole collection that this comes from, it's my first collection, which is as of yet unpublished. I'm very careful with my work. It's called Little Black Book, and it's a it's a book of names of people from my past, and each poem is a first name, and it sort of unpacks that memory.
But is there really a Christopher, or just
there? They're all autobiographical.
But do you use new names?
No, I kept the real first names.
Do you know that's good?
Yes.
Because I tried to change names, and it doesn't work.
It doesn't. It feels inauthentic, doesn't it?
Yes. I think it's like there's no risk, really.
No, I mean, if it's true, it's
and
not...
And it's your experience.
Right. I mean, it's not liable if it's true, so I'm not liable.
It is. That is such a sweet, tender moment.
Yes.
And such... And using... How did you get around to using the words, what the hell? To introduce every idea.
Well, that was the reaction when it happened.
Third grader says, what the hell?
Uh-huh. It was like caught off guard, and he said that, and I was just struck by it. And then, you know, that instant shame. Those are the words that stuck with me. I mean, so, and it happened to be my stop, so it was a good time to get off, but that's why.
Well, boy, I'm very glad that you remembered that.
Yes.
So your new book is actually a process of remembering.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And here he is. Chad Vrain.
Andrew, our first date with Slavo Žižek, a philosophy lecture, free at the art museum, front row in folding chairs sipping hot tea, your idea of a courtship. Charmed by Žižek, deaf to everything but the sound of his Slovene voice slurring his words into thick stew, shaggy gray face like a wire fox terrier. I say I love you, Žižek posits, pleased with himself, only the way a poet does. He says it again for effect. Your eyes flash like slate blue diodes. Later, you update your Facebook with this quote as if it's brilliant. Of course a poet knows nothing of love. I didn't ride the train here with a dog-eared book of Proust for show. And you won't hear from me that I love you in any way, even though I scan your soft lips with my eyes while Žižek mutters something rational and empty.
Let's have another. Yes. We're at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we are welcoming Chad Vrain from near Philadelphia.
This is Pot v. Pan. The courtroom artist has depicted them with as much dignity as possible, one fresh from its notched groove in the washer, the other food-flecked, dug out of the sink. Both clutched in the fists of the young witness, cowlick-coiffed, suited in finest Oshkosh, a year too big to crawl in the cabinet, dashing for something to dash together to drown out flying deadbeats and bitches, devolved from the arguments on both sides into screaming, silences and china shattered in the next room, mother, father. The clangor of the closing argument, dissonant cymbals, hollow timpani, a refrain of you worthless piece of crap, a desperate cowfalong countersong, is hushed by the bang of the oak gavel, a slammed front door, a wan slice of cheesecake on the counter, unsmothered by cherry, unpunctured by fork or tooth, still guilty.
If you were to consolidate that on the literal level in one sentence, what would you say was happening?
Child hiding with parents fighting.
I have a question
yes.
for you, and I don't know who to ask, really. Should there be a genre that's called gay poetry that we can emphasize, publicize, as well as mainstream, of course? But is that a good thing?
Well, I think there is. So gay and lesbian literature, I think, is sort of its own genre already, but maybe it doesn't get all the press that it should. And I noticed there are really no journals directly catering to it, maybe one or two, and a lot of them are defunct, and I think it's a very underserved market.
I think we're onto something because I know disabilities is one. Women poets don't like to be considered women poets.
Right.
You know, they like to be poets, or black poets don't like to be just black poets. But nevertheless, there is from compression and intensity power.
Yes.
And I think that there should be an anthology, first of all, maybe, edited by you.
That would be nice.
And I think that you should send your manuscript to Mark Doty.
I think I would love to. So what I think is representation is important, and that's part of what I want to do with my margins panel, that it's, but what I don't want is tokenism. I don't want to just assemble.
That's the problem.
I don't want a literary Benetton ad. That's not what I'm going for. What I'm going for is representation and personal experience.
That is well said. That is the whole, that's a delicate balance,
it
isn't
is.
It?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you don't want condescension, and
no,
you don't want
not.
Special things. But yet, if I have to be considered a woman poet rather than nothing.
Right.
I'll be a woman poet.
That's what. That's how I finally came to write about my experiences. I was afraid of being pigeonholed as just a gay poet, and I'm leaning on that and having nothing else to write about. But I found out it's a strength to draw on that because I have unique experiences that I can draw upon that I think make my work more accessible. So
your work is beautiful.
Thank you. So this is from a new collection that I'm in the process of writing. Each of the poems is based on 1970s gay handkerchief code, which is sort of an interesting subcultural phenomenon now that there's distance from it, where men would wear a handkerchief in their back pocket, gay men, who of course were not out at the time, and they could see based upon that handkerchief what the person was looking for in a man or in general. And it was this very elaborate system whereby if you were knew about it, you could tell a lot about a person, but I found it so ingenious for them to do this right in the public eye and still get away with it that I thought adapting to circumstances and society's disapproval was very resourceful. So what I'm writing with these, which are for some reason all sonnets, they just came out that way, is to show the more complexity of contemporary gay relationships, that people are looking for more than just something physical in a lot of cases, and that... I think that gay people's place in society has changed and become a lot more complex. So that's what these reflect. And oh, also the pocket that it was in meant something. So the left pocket meant they were more the aggressor, the right pocket more the submissive. So the right pocket poems are more vulnerable, the left are a little more aggressive. So this is Pale Paisley Handkerchief, right pocket. I step sideways into my other life. See us lying there, twined like dead ivy on a cold wall. No room for pillow talk about the men who have used us before and never returned for seconds. The veil between worlds heavy as down comforters and talk of dying fathers. I will float through the wall into the next apartment and hover like steaming breath in the room over the sleeping family huddled in one bed for warmth, desperate husbands separated by three squirming children from safe harbor and helplessly erect. The chill breeze on his skin, my phantom mouth. Bloody handkerchief.
Okay, tell us what that is.
Oh, yes.
And which pocket that's in.
That left pocket, yes.
Is it red?
Well, so some of these are abstract. Like, they might not physically exist as a handkerchief. And again, that's supposed to be more. So here, yes, it's actually one that's bloodied. Bloody handkerchief, left pocket. Means I'm into childhood trauma. Tell me about the time you skinned your knee. Skin it back and forth, hand cupping gingerly. Big wheel idling, alone. Show me on the doll where they cut you. Where the base of your pain grows proud from its mound, desperate to root anywhere else. I like to think that loss is more than flesh wounds. More than the people who scrape against our lives, each taking one of our finite layers in their passing. And we are docked more than a flap of skin for this lesson, that what bears itself, red and shining to the hungry open air, cannot ever be covered up again.
Very powerful.
And finally, a little political. Conservative handkerchief, right pocket.
What color is it?
It's conservative.
But, I mean, what if it's paisley?
It could be. So some of these
are
just...
overlap.
They could, yeah.
One could be a submissive conservative.
That's entirely right. Conservative handkerchief, right pocket. I want your hands, fresh from signing a bill to take away my health care, my access to the pill that stops transmission of bloodborne, slow cyanide, bubbling up your pen onto my clean page to bend me over a desk of laws that thoroughly screw me over. So hard I have all the bloody, cold calculus of it tattooed backwards on my cheeks. Tell me I've been a naughty little constituent. Tell me I love when you smack the marriage right out of me and the fiscal responsibility right in. So deep it feels ingrained. So hard I want to pull a lever in your name.
That is terrific. It's very hard to write a polemical, witty poem, you know? And very hard.
And that sort of came out of the fact that I realized I found a prominent political figure, not the prominent one, but a prominent one, attractive, despite disagreeing with everything he believes. So I was like, God, that's a weird conflict. And what does that say about me? So I was like, let's explore it. And there we go.
First time ever.
Yeah, that's right. So that's sort of what this collection is doing. And there are, again, for some reason, all sonnets. It just sort of came out that way. But I like to write in structure, not always meter, but I write 10-syllable lines for some reason. It's always been my thing.
That's your energy.
It is. And it's that constraint that I think I draw strength from. It's like putting together a puzzle, like I mentioned earlier. And I don't expect people to notice it.
Well, that's a good thing.
Right. So it can be hidden. But if they want to go in and unpack it, I like to sneak a lot of literary devices in there. I have a very strong Latin background. So I guess those, all of that Ovid and Virgil and Catullus especially, my biggest influence, is in there. So if people really want to dig, they can find it. But I want it to be
accessible. Well, they're just as smooth as silk.
Thank you.
And so that craft does not come from nothing at all. I was wondering, looking at you and talking about your life, at what point as a child did you get turned? Did you hear a poem or did you know this is my art?
I guess I did. I mean, probably Shel Silverstein, like most kids, you know, reading
Where the Sidewalk Ends. And you knew you could do it?
No, well, I always tried my hand at it and I always felt something. Like when I would write something, I was so excited to show it to anybody. And I should come to school the next day, like, look what I did, and find the excuse to use it for class or something. But I always did feel isolated, like I didn't have a writing community. And I had it finally when I got to undergrad. And then I sort of, you know, I graduated and I didn't go immediately to grad school. I wanted to wait until I could pay for it out of pocket, which is what I did. But I waited 10 years to go back for my MFA. And I was very isolated. And I wasn't writing, which was bad. I didn't have that support.
Do you think that's why you're building community now?
Yes, that's exactly why I'm doing it. And
so
that's why I'm going for, I'm trying to support marginalized groups too, because part of that isolation I felt growing up in small town Pennsylvania, being gay and not being able to tell anybody was that too.
Is it a small town?
It is, yeah, in Lansdale actually. So it's Montgomery County, but very small. And I want to build that community. That's important to me.
And you are doing it.
Yes. This is Cracking a Safe at the Bottom of a Lake. Don't ask why I'm diving now, an antique stethoscope trailing, draped around my neck like a thin black scarf, eyes scrunched tightly shut, arms stretched ahead to navigate by touch. Streamers of loam silt break across my face, and I feel hot pinches as fish and frogs nip at my fingers, thinking them pale worms, until I thump into something solid. It isn't important how it happened, whether I'm asleep, writhing in cotton sheets in a dream of muck-crusted metal, or recovering a heist gone awry. A largemouth bass cruises by, ridge-fin-backed and green-striped like long-dead Dimetrodon, and as I whirl the dial, listening for the telltale click of the right number, I wonder at the fish's simple grace, what it has devoured, what it might devour still, and my relevance in this quiet place next to it. No. It doesn't matter why I'm here, whether I get it open, or whether it's filled with Spanish doubloons, the cure for cancer, or, slowly running out of air, perhaps the love of my life.
That would be a signature poem, I think.
So this actually came out of a prompt, and it was to write something surreal. And I thought of dream imagery, and I thought... I took an element of strangeness and just kept making it stranger. So I did have a dream about a safe at the bottom of the lake for some reason. And probably Freud would say something about, I don't know, anxiety or pressure. Maybe.
Whatever. It works.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, you have a closing poem for us.
Yes. This is my father as every male titan from Greek mythology.
And this is the poem I fell in love with.
Yes. Prometheus, whose name means forethought. Liver torn out daily by a gray goose, my father is cursed for bringing the world fire, the cinder at the end of the paper torch dangling from the corner of his mouth. Helios, titan of the sun. His chariot idles, red and rust-flecked pickup in the drive, six-string lyre ballads floating on the air from a boombox plugged in the yard. Neil Young whines, old man, look at my life. Astraeus, titan of dusk and winds. He sits, smokes, drinks. The flaking green picnic table is black like everything is black in the moments after dusk has fallen, but before lights on their timers switch on. Pallas, titan of Warcraft. With his shirt off, it is impossible to tell what is shrapnel and what is vitiligo. A black and white photo of a young man, helmet like a beetle shell, rests on my bookcase. Atlas, bearer of heavens and Ayn Rand's estate. Maybe he shrugs because of his bursitis. Maybe he is disemboweled Viet Cong so Congress, men in gilded seats, could snort their lines off their desks and pork their mistresses in peace. Cronus, who overthrew his father. I remember stealing those wrapped strawberry hard candies with wrappers, also like strawberries, from Nana's candy dish, while my father yelled at his father, "I'm voting for Dukakis!" Iapetus, titan of mortality. We drive to Wilkes-Barre. I want to say bar, because of the irony, but no, it is Barry. At the VA clinic, he sneaks a vodka in a Starbucks cup and thinks no one can tell. Uranus, titan of the heavens. The dick doctor, as he calls him, gives a fresh diagnosis of bladder cancer. On the way home, Sky's old undershirt drips on us from yellow-brown, pit-stained clouds. Epimetheus, whose name means afterthought. His hair is stark white now, like leaves turning when the tree knows they are about to fall. The dick doctor will cut him soon. Neil Young will whine, "Old man, take a look at my life. I'm a lot like you."
The voice of Chad Frame. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the library for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation, the Reva Logan Foundation, the Cy Nipid Fund, and friend of poetry, Kathy Haley. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.